Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, April 24th, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Transportation, Unlocking the Power of Nature. First U.S. B99 pump primed for biodiesel truck fueling by Tony Reed, Decatur. Now is the summer of the Illinois soybeans farmer discontent as fears about the fallout of an intensifying China trade war loom over their fields. But one glorious beam of hope shone forth Tuesday at Decatur's Pilot Travel Center on East Boyd Road, the unveiling of the nation's first B99 biodiesel fuel pump for semi-commercial fleets. The B99 fuel is composed of 99% renewable and cleaner burning fuels like soy oil, and even used cooking oil, combined with only 1% traditional diesel refined from crude oil. The hope is to see these new B99 pumps spread across the nation as demand for less polluting fuel grows. Pilot also plans to introduce them this spring and summer to its travel centers in Des Moines, Iowa, and Dallas, Texas. So as President Donald Trump's tariffs threaten to choke China's massive appetite for American soybeans, the prospect of draining off a bigger slice of the American commercial truck fuel market offers some consolation for Illinois farmers and agricultural processors like Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM worked with Pilot to launch the B99 pump in Decatur, and some 10% of the firm's vast trucking fleet is running on biodiesel already to help it meet clean energy goals. ADM's purpose is really to unlock the power of nature and to enrich the quality of life wherever we're at, said Brandon Rick, fleet manager for ADM Transportation, speaking at Tuesday's B99 fuel pump unveiling. And we achieve that purpose by advancing the broad strategies of sustainable growth. Sustainability really drives our purpose. It's going to take an awful lot of sustainable purpose, however, to make up for the Chinese market if the current trade standoff continues. Biggest buyer. China has been the biggest buyer of American-produced soybeans, gulping down $12.8 billion worth in 2024, which added up to 27 million metric tons. A New York Times study said that worked out at 9 cents of every dollar of goods this nation sold to China. But with the Chinese now imposing 135% tariffs in response to the Trump administration hitting them with 145% tariffs on their many exports to America, the Chinese soy market looks to be getting plowed under for both American farmers and grain processors and marketers like ADM. Another speaker at Tuesday's B99 fuel pump launch was Ron Kindred, a soybean farmer and chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association. And he doesn't beat around any bushes, explaining that he's worried about what's going on. It's a stressful time for our members. It's a stressful time for all Illinois farmers, he said, pointing out Illinois is the nation's biggest grower of soybeans. There's the uncertainty of what is going to happen with these tariffs, how long they're going to be on, and how it's going to impact our trade in the future with China. And not just China. You know, the first tariffs went on all of our top 10 customers of Illinois soybeans overseas. And now those came off for everybody but China. But it's still a big concern. What kind of agreement are we going to get in the end? How are we going to be impacted out there on the farm? I mean, it's a real problem. Kindred said Illinois farmers have been through this before, recalling another trade war with China in 2018. He said that eventually receded, but left permanent scars. We lost market share after that was all said and done, he added. South America expanded and picked up that share, and that is our concern now. Are we going to lose market share? And is South America going to expand more if they, the Chinese, become more reliant on South America than the U.S.? Grow that market. The farmer was speaking while standing in the shadow of the Pilot Travel Center biodiesel pump, the so far lone metallic ambassador from a future holding out the prospect of a move into the broad sunlit uplands of homegrown market growth for soybean fuels. Yeah, right now, let's grow that domestic market, said Kindred with a smile. Entry to the clean soy fuel future doesn't come cheap, however. A company called Optimus Technologies has been working with ADM and other big fleet customers to retrofit their trucks to burn B99 biodiesel. Optimus CEO Colin Hewiler said the cost works out at between $25,000 and $30,000 per vehicle. He estimates that, right now, some 1,200 trucks are rolling across the nation burning B99, which costs $3.34 a gallon, about the same as regular truck diesel. Hewiler says companies like ADM are willing to make the investment to switch to B99 because they need to meet cleaner air standards, both those mandated by the government and by the firm's customers and their own corporate governance. For ADM, it helps them meet their sustainability and their emission reduction goals without impacting their operations, Hewiler added. But there are still other potential speed bumps on the road to wider B99 acceptance. A former federal tax credit that provided $1 per gallon subsidy for biodiesel production ended in 2024. It was replaced by the Clean Fuel Production Credit, 45Z, which has a more complex implementation formula, and some critics have said is now creating instability and uncertainty in the biodiesel production industry. Ironically, one sign of that instability appeared on the Pilot webpage, touting the first-in-the-nation arrival of B99 biodiesel in Decatur. In the middle of the Pilot article about Decatur was an ad promoting the sale of a biodiesel manufacturing plant in Massachusetts. The equipment and 26-acre site was being sold in what was described as a secured party sale, which means a liquidation sale after a borrower defaulted on their loan. This article is accompanied by two full-color photos attributed to Tony Reed Photos, Herald and Review. The first is captioned, "An Archer Daniels Midland Company truck is fueled with the first tank of B99 biodiesel from the nation's first pump of its kind at Decatur's Pilot Travel Center. Some 10% of ADM's trucking fleet now runs on B99, a cleaner burning diesel fuel which is made from soybean oil and other renewable sources." The second photo is captioned, "Fleet manager for Archer Daniels Midland Company Transportation, Brandon Rick, Center, helps cut the ribbon declaring the nation's first B99 biodiesel commercial truck fuel pump open for business. Among the guests watching is Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf." U.S. Senate, Durbin won't run in 2026. Several Dems possible primary contenders, by Brendan Moore. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a son of East St. Louis, who rose to become the second most powerful Democrat in the U.S. Senate, announced Wednesday that he will not seek re-election in 2026. "The decision of whether to run for re-election has not been easy," Durbin said in a video announcement. "I truly love the job of being a United States Senator. But in my heart, I know it's time to pass the torch. Right now, the challenges facing our country are historic and unprecedented," Durbin said. "The threats to our democracy and way of life are very real. And I can assure you that I will do everything in my power to fight for Illinois and the future of our country every day of my remaining time in the Senate." Durbin's decision ends months of political speculation on the 80-year-old's next move, and sets in motion an open Democratic primary next year that could feature some heavy hitters in state politics eager to move up. He has been a fixture in Illinois government and politics for more than a half century, from interning for U.S. Senator Paul Douglas while attending Georgetown University, to serving in the U.S. House, and before his election in 1996 to the Senate seat Douglas once held. Dick Durbin is, and will always be, a giant of the United States Senate, said U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, his Democratic colleague from Illinois, in a statement. He has dedicated his life to making our state, as well as our nation, stronger, and we are all better for it. Governor J.B. Pritzker, in a statement, lauded Durbin as a consistent champion and reliable leader for our working families, civil rights, health care, climate, and beyond. His legacy is defined not just by the legislation he passed, but by the undeniable positive impact his character and moral leadership has had on the nation, Pritzker said. Together with his talented wife, Loretta, who has trained and encouraged so many women who have become successful public servants, Dick remains a clear voice for truth, equality, and justice. If he serves out his term, Durbin will be the longest-serving senator in Illinois history, beating former Senator Shelby Cullom by one day. Several possible contenders emerge. Durbin's retirement will set off massive upheaval within state Democratic politics. The primary to succeed him is expected to be crowded. Possible candidates include Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, and U.S. Representative Lauren Underwood. Stratton opened a federal political action committee earlier this year and told Lee Enterprises that she would be interested in running for the seat if Durbin retired. And political insiders have long pegged Krishnamoorthy as a likely candidate. The Schaumburg Democrat has more than $19 million in his campaign account and has been traveling the state over the past year. Underwood, a Black woman who defeated an incumbent Republican in a heavily white congressional district in 2018, has long been viewed as a rising star in the party. Kelly has served in Congress since 2013. She previously ran statewide, losing an election for state treasurer in 2010, and she was briefly chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois. Several more are expected to give the race a look. Durbin's path to the Capitol. Upon attaining his law degree, Durbin returned to Illinois, settling down in Springfield. But he always had the political bug. He ran unsuccessfully for Illinois Senate in 1976 and for Lieutenant Governor in 1978. But the third time proved to be the charm for Durbin when, in 1982, he defeated 11-term incumbent Republican Representative Paul Finley by less than 1,400 votes to represent a West Central Illinois congressional district that stretched from Quincy to Decatur and swaths of rural areas in between. Durbin served 14 years in the House. In 1996, Durbin ran for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Paul Simon. He easily defeated future Governor Pat Quinn in the Democratic primary and won a larger-than-expected victory against Republican State Representative Al Salvi in the general election. Durbin has subsequently been re-elected four times by double-digit margins. Durbin has been in leadership almost his entire time in the Senate, and in 2005 he was named Democratic Whip, the number two position within the caucus, and a title he still holds. This stature has put Durbin in a strong position to federal dollars home. During the Biden administration, Durbin served as the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he oversaw the confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson and more than 200 federal judges. Throughout his tenure, Durbin has been the chief champion of proposed legislation that would grant legal status to undocumented people who were brought to the United States as children. Known as the DREAM Act, the legislation has been introduced several times, but has never passed both houses of Congress. One of his most consequential acts as a House member, when he served as the chief sponsor of legislation signed into law in 1990 that banned smoking on commercial airline flights. Duckworth, his colleague from Illinois, was among prominent Democrats who lauded Durbin's public service after Wednesday's announcement. "It has been the honor of a lifetime to get to work alongside a leader who embodies what it means to be a true public servant. Someone who has never, ever stopped caring enough about our nation to do the hard, grueling work necessary to make her a little more fair, a little more just, one day, one bill, one constituent at a time," she said. Education. Decatur to Get Foreign Teachers by Valerie Wells. Decatur. An international exchange program to bring teachers from other countries to Decatur schools could help alleviate the ongoing teacher shortage. Peoria Public Schools District 150 is a sponsor of an exchange visitor program with a goal of providing international teachers with opportunities to participate in education and cultural programs in the United States. Participating teachers are placed in a K-12 host school for 1 to 3 years and teach a wide range of subjects with a possibility of a 2-year extension. "This is an exchange program," said Mary Brady, director of teaching and learning for elementary. "It's not just one-sided. They have to, every year, have at least one cross-cultural activity they do with their classroom. A lot of them look like pen pal relationships with a classroom in their home country, maybe at the end of year meet via Zoom, potlucks where they bring in food, religious, or cultural activities. We have to remember these teachers are exchanging. That doesn't mean we're sending teachers to those countries, though there might be opportunities for a visit. This is for our students to have those cultural experiences." The Decatur School Board on Tuesday approved a partnership with Peoria Schools to bring that program to Decatur. The teachers will come to this country on an exchange visitor visa after first passing background checks in their home countries, an international background check, and one in Illinois. They will be licensed in Illinois and have to pass the same annual evaluation other Decatur teachers do and will receive the same pay scale. Additionally, the Decatur district will pay the Peoria district $4,000 per teacher for the first year and $2,000 per year after that, as Peoria takes responsibility for the teachers' visas, licensing, 24/7 support, and other costs. The teachers will have to pass an interview process with Decatur's Human Resources Department and the Decatur Education Association before a job offer will be extended to come to Decatur. As many as 50 international teachers could come to Decatur, which would help relieve the teacher shortage in the district as well. The teachers must have at least 2 years of teaching experience in their home country and proficiency in English, and pay for their own travel and living expenses. Peoria's Christopher Rowitter, with the program there for 5 years, said there are 118 international teachers in that district, and it's been a success. "I tell people all the time, this by far is the most precious thing I've been a part of," he said. Decatur Human Resources Director Monica Wilkes said the district is spending far more in internal subbing costs to split students among other classrooms. The $200,000 the program would cost if 50 international teachers are hired, as she expects, is a significant savings over the $2.5 million the district has spent in the last year on extra pay to teachers who take on extra students in their buildings. Decatur schools have 120 certified teaching vacancies, counting general education and special education, and the international teachers in the program have certification in several of the most critical areas. Many are elementary teachers, with a significant number of them able to teach middle school science and math, and others who are certified to teach special education students. She presented a 5-point plan to the school board to recruit teachers, both through traditional and non-traditional means. But this program could provide some relief while also bringing cultural enrichment to students in Decatur. "We're not saying this is a permanent solution," she said. "We're not trying to turn over our workforce to international teachers. But we can get some great, qualified, experienced teachers and students can learn a lot culturally. 50 international teachers would be 42% of the 120 vacancies. Interviews will begin later this week, and the hope is to have the International Teachers Indicator in July ready to begin the 2025-26 school year. Coroner IDs body found in Clinton by Drew Zimmerman, Clinton. Skeletal remains discovered in a wooded area off Weldon Springs Road in Clinton late last year have been identified by DeWitt County Coroner Randy Rice. Using familial DNA testing, the remains were confirmed to be those of Neil Matthew McGuire, 74, formerly of Granada, Mississippi. The manner of death has been ruled a suicide, according to a news release from the coroner's office. The coroner's office had reported in January that remains had been found December 24th in a wooded area behind Arrowhead Acres. The investigation into McGuire's death has been led by the coroner's office, the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office, and the Illinois State Police's Crime Scene Investigation Unit, the news release said. Rice is asking for the public's help to locate any living relatives or friends of McGuire. Those with information should call the coroner's office at 217-935-3166. Fire crews honored after rescuing five by Tony Reed, Decatur. Six Decatur firefighters received letters of commendation and unit citations for their efforts in saving five people, one of whom had to be revived, from a burning Decatur apartment building. A news release from the Decatur Fire Department said the blaze happened on February 7th in the 500 block of South Church Street. Crews arrived to find a multi-story building with flames leaping from a second-floor window and smoke coming from windows on both the second and third floors. Four occupants were at a third-floor window calling for help, said the release. Engine 1 crew attacked the fire, while Truck 1 crew simultaneously deployed the ladder to the third floor to rescue all four occupants. Those rescued were described at the time as two adults and two children. Once the fire had been knocked down, the Engine 1 crew carried out a search of the building and found the unresponsive fifth victim inside. The victim was removed, and the crew immediately initiated medical care until they were relieved by AMR Abbott personnel, the release said. The victim survived this incident thanks to DFD. The firefighters honored with the letters of commendation were Truck 1 crew, Lieutenant Blake Johnson, Lieutenant Mike Smith, firefighter Jeremy Durbin. The unit citation was awarded to Engine 1 crew, probationary firefighter Kieran Cole, firefighter Luke McKenzie, Lieutenant Robert Guthrie. Woman admits robbing cancer patient by Tony Reed, Decatur. The Decatur woman, who police said beat a chair-bound cancer patient because he wouldn't give her money so she could satisfy her craving for drugs, has been sentenced to 24 months probation. Shakina D. Anderson, 39, pleaded guilty in Macon County Circuit Court to a charge of robbery. The plea was part of a deal that saw further charges of theft and aggravated battery to a victim aged over 60 dismissed by Judge Jeffrey Geisler. The case dates to June of 2023, when a sworn affidavit from the Decatur Police Department said Anderson had been staying with the 74-year-old male victim. He is quoted as telling police they were not in a romantic relationship, but he sometimes let her sleep at his home, and this time she was there after breaking up with her boyfriend. Police officer Alex Amaya, who signed the affidavit, quoted the victim as saying Anderson had become enraged after begging him for money so she could buy dope. The frightened victim then called the police, and Amaya said this further angered Anderson, who began beating the victim with her fists. He said Shakina then hit him two or three times with his crutch. He said Shakina hit him in the head with a glass, a coffee cup, or something. He stated he has a urinal next to his chair that Shakina dumped over him, Amaya said. Anderson was then described as fleeing, having first grabbed the victim's cell phone and also stealing various medicines, including a cancer drug valued at $20,000. Anderson appeared in court April 9th and was also sentenced to 4 days in the Macon County Jail, but that was canceled out with credit for 4 days already served. The defendant was ordered to report to the probation office within 72 hours of her release from custody, but that probation appointment looks like it's going to have to wait. Her record shows she is wanted for unspecified crimes in Mississippi, and she has agreed to be extradited without a hearing. She will be kept in the jail until law enforcement officers from Mississippi arrive to collect her. Houston Estate to Sell Memorabilia by Jeanette Beckett. Decatur. Movies and memorabilia collected by the late Avon Theater owner Skip Houston will be for sale from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, April 26th, at 110 South Austin Avenue, Decatur. Items come from his collection of movies, movie memorabilia, and Avon items. The family has advertised the assortment of items includes rare DVDs and Blu-rays, Universal monster figures, and decorations. Houston passed away January 31st. The family decided to close the 100-year-old theater a few weeks later. For more information, visit the Avon Theater Facebook page. Today in history. Today's highlight. On April 24th, 1916, Irish Republicans launched the Easter Rising, a rebellion against British rule in Ireland. Though the rebels surrendered to British forces 6 days later, the uprising set the stage for Republican victories in the Irish general election of 1918 and the establishment of the Irish Free State via the Anglo-Irish Treaty in 1922. Also on this date, in 1915, in what is considered the start of the Armenian Genocide, the Ottoman Empire began rounding up Armenian political and cultural leaders in Constantinople. In 1967, Soviet cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov was killed when his Soyuz 1 spacecraft smashed into the Earth after his parachutes failed to deploy properly during re-entry. In 1980, the United States launched Operation Eagle Claw, an unsuccessful attempt to free 53 American hostages in Iran that resulted in the deaths of 8 U.S. service members. In 1990, Space Shuttle Discovery blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, carrying the $1.5 billion Hubble Space Telescope. In 1995, the final bomb linked to the Unabomber exploded inside the Sacramento, California offices of the California Forestry Association, killing chief lobbyist Gilbert B. Murray. Theodore Kaczynski was later sentenced to 4 lifetimes in prison for a series of bombings. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, April 24th, 2025. Please stay tuned.